Thank you. Self-organizing interlocking complexity is something I've been interested in for a number of years. Interest is growing, and I finally got around to playing with some computer models of it, which are a lot of fun. I'll say more about a reflection on this later, but for right now, I just want to say self-assembly to produce complexes which have capabilities far beyond their component pieces is something we see at a lot of levels in creation, in physics, biology, societies of organisms. And for now, that's enough reason to study it. And I'll say more later, but it's just fun. So I should define my terms. By interlocking complexity or interdependence, I'll use those interchangeably, I mean there's multiple parts that have to be present and working properly in order for the system to perform its functions. And if certain single parts are removed, the entire system is greatly impaired or doesn't function at all, like a clock. Self-organized interlocking complexity means that the parts are not put in place by hand by an external agent, but from a simple initial condition, the complex arrangement self-assembles over time as the pieces interact. And computer modeling is a great way to study this. And as I said, there's growing interest in this in physics, in biology, in the social sciences. So I'm going to start with the economic one. Now, this falls in economics into a field called agent-based modeling, where you build a computer model where agents represent a person or a company or an industry or a state who makes decisions about how to manage resources and gather things up and make trades and so forth. And think about, in our modern economy, think about a truck. What does it take to make a truck? Well, you need a metal refining industry, you need a petroleum extracting industry, you need a petroleum refining industry, you need glass manufacturing industry, electronics industry, rubber industry. You need all of those, and every one of those industries, in turn, depends on trucks existing to bring them their parts and to ship their products out. Now, how did all this interdependence develop? Nobody sat down a century and a half ago and said, let's make an economy where all these different industries are highly interdependent, and if you remove one, the whole system collapses. It evolved over time. So I and an economist thought, can we make a computer model that models this building up of interdependence over time, where technology is sort of a key feature of it? So in our model, we have agents who gather resources every day of the model, and using economist speak, they gather resources based on the utility it gives them. They can specialize in gathering some resources and gain efficiency. They can trade resources with each other. And then they can combine resources to make tools and devices. I'll say more about that later. That's where it gets really fun. And then they can specialize in making devices and trade devices. So our agents spend, their day is divided into six phases. First, we picked a number, 600 minutes a day, where they gather resources, and they gather based on what gives them the most gain per minute. Now, this busy graph, the lower axis is the number of units they have of some resource. And resource can just mean, you know, wood or leather or fruit or grain. And the y-axis is utility, and what economists tell us is, you know, those first few units give you a big gain in utility, but the more and more units you get, you still gain utility, but it's less and less as you go along. Pretty standard in economics. And then agents can gain experience. So the x-axis is your experience with gathering a resource, and the y-axis is how much time it takes you to gather the next one. So this is just meant to model that the more time you spend gathering a particular resource, the more efficient you get at it. All right, so right away, agents can begin to specialize because if an agent faces two resources that it's equally good at gathering and gets equal benefit from, it'll randomly decide to gather one. But then it gets more experience with that one, so the next one is easier to gather and easier to gather and easier to gather. So just by that first random decision, agents start to separate from each other. Some specialize in one resource, some specialize in another. Well, then, in phase two, they can trade. So agent who specializes, agent one in this case, has a lot in red. Agent A has a lot of resource two and not so much of resource one. Agent B has a lot of resource one, but not so much of two. So this is sort of a graphical representation of something you can intuit. If I have a lot of something and you have a lot of something else and we both want you know, about equal amounts. Well, I'll trade you some of what I got a lot of, and you trade me some of what you got a lot of, and we're both happier, okay? And we can model this sort of trading in our model. And that, again, rewards more specialization. Now, invention of tools. How many of you have played Settlers of Catan? Yeah, so you know you can combine wood and brick and ore to make, you know, things that increase in value. Well, so what we allow our agents to do is they can invent a tool which is a combination of one unit of five different resources, and that tool will then speed up the extraction of another resource. So, you know, a bunch of wood and leather and stone can make an axe, which you can, or can make a spade, which can speed up the gathering of another resource. And the more experience they have, the more time. And tools have limited lifetime. Where it really gets fun and interdependent is after they learn to make a bunch of different tools, they learn, well, hey, I can combine six different tools and make a machine. And a machine will speed up the gathering of a resource even more than a tool will. And then they can combine six machines to make factories and six factories to make industries. And in this way, you get highly interdependent because that one machine depends on six tools, each of which depends on five resources. So now there's 30 different resources. There's maybe a little redundancy in there. But pretty soon, by the time you get to factories and industries, every factory and industry to be made requires every resource that's in the model. And so now the extraction of every resource is dependent on the extraction of every other resource, as well as the manufacturing of these devices. So now there's huge interdependence. All right, then we allow agents to trade devices with each other by cost-benefit analysis. I'm not going to say a lot about that to make time for other things. Agents can get fast at making devices, so this is another effort curve. Experience in making a device is on the bottom axis. Time it takes is on this axis. So this rewards agents for specializing in making some devices and not others. And finally, at the end of every day, some of their tools wear out, some of the resources they gathered fade away, and if they haven't spent time doing some particular task, they lose a little experience with that. All right, the result, wealth grows. So this is a growth, this is the model day on the x-axis, and average agent's extraction speed, which is a measure of their wealth, on the y-axis, and the lowest blue graph is when the agents don't make tools and don't trade. Now, the red line is with they don't make devices, but they can at least trade with each other. The green line is if they can make those first-order devices, just tools. But the other lines are the average and the minimum and maximum of runs where they allow them to make machines and industries and factors, and the wealth just keeps going up and up and up, as well as the interdependence. So this is a graph that shows there's model day on the x-axis, and on the y-axis shows the percentage of time spent gathering resources by different devices. And the white at the beginning is gathering by hand. The blue is where they're gathering by tools. Red is by machines. Green is by factories. Purple is by industry. So as time goes, higher and higher order devices get invented and used. And this is a measure of specialization. I'm not going to say that too much about that. It's just we have mathematical evidence that our agents specialize. So initially, they're gathering every resource they can by hand. And in the end, every resource is being gathered by only two out of 24 agents and then traded around. So they're really specializing in what they gather. Now, this is what I call a measure of interlocking complexity. So on the y-axis, you have the number of resources that go into the gathering of another resource. So to gather one unit of a resource, how many other units of other resources had to have been involved in the making of the devices? And the numbers just go way up. Now, since we only have 24 resources in the model, all those numbers higher than 24 indicate interdependence. The same resource can be used in eight different tools and four different machines and so forth. So that's one measure of interlocking complexity. Another measure of interlocking complexity is what happens if you actually remove one of the resources from the model. So here we measure the total utility of all the agents in red, and then on day 3000, we just took one resource out of all 24 out of the model. Well, now every device that depended upon that resource was no longer available. The economy collapsed. by a factor of 2 when measured by utility, by a factor of 10 when measured by actual extraction speeds. But then they managed to reinvent their devices without that missing resource. So there's interlocking complexity right there. You remove one piece out of 24 and the whole thing just gets far worse for everybody. And now this is a measure. The red line measures tools made by machines designed only to speed up the manufacturing of tools. And blue is the line of machines made only by factories which speed up the manufacturing, the making of machines. The point of this graph is, once you get to about day 800 or day 1000, agents are making lots of tools, but they're never using tools for their original purpose of gathering resources. They're making tools in order to make machines, in order to make factories. And then they're making machines in order to speed up the making of tools. So the making of tools and the making of machines to speed up the making of tools don't directly contribute to their wealth. But they spend a lot of time doing it because it indirectly contributes to their wealth. And this is, you know, if you will, like a little biochemical circuit in a cell which is doing this complex thing that the cell needs to survive, even though it doesn't itself gather food for the cell. All right, so that is the economic model. And then you might think, well, okay, so these agents are actually making decisions. The computer program is deciding how to spend time based on what will give it the greatest gain tomorrow. Do I gather resources? Do I make a machine and use it myself? Do I make a machine and trade it to somebody else? Well, what gives me the biggest gain over the next 24 hours? Can we, and complexity evolves. I should point out here, the agents all start out identical. They're all absolutely identical in wealth and abilities and preferences and everything. And at the end, every agent is employing a unique strategy based on its history, and every agent is dependent on every other agent and trading back and forth all of these different resources. So that's kind of like, in some respects, the evolution of complexity in our economy. Now, can we do this with Darwinian mechanisms? So we made another model inspired by biology. So we call them pikaryotes because it's written in the Python programming language. These are artificial organisms. So what they do, and you'll see a lot of similarities with the economic model, they gather chemicals from their environment, and the more chemicals they gather, the greater fitness they have. But it has this shape curve where the first few chemicals give a lot big gain in fitness, and the more chemicals they gather, the decreasing gains in fitness. They have genomes, which are strings of codons. These organisms make proteins from their gathered chemicals. These proteins sometimes form into complexes. And after a certain number of genome reading steps, the fitness is calculated not directly from the genome, but indirectly from how many chemicals they've gathered from the environment. And then the fitness determines the reproductive probability and mutations happen. So of all the living organisms, the ones that these probably most closely model would be single-celled organisms that sort of exist as spores and then land on a food source, and then maybe several different ones land at the same time, and they reproduce like mad really fast until the food source is gone, and then they disperse and look for another food source with possibly some mutations along the way. And so let's look at a little more details at some of these things. So the codons of these are a string of numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, indicating chemical number 1, chemical number 2, chemical number 3. If the organism reads a codon of 0 in its genome, that means switch to gather mode. That means when you read chemical 1, gather chemical 1. When you read chemical 3, gather chemical 3. When you read chemical 5, gather chemical 5. If it encounters a codon of negative 1, it means switch to move mode. Now, we haven't actually implemented moving. We got it working, but we haven't studied it yet. So let's focus on codon number 2. No, number negative 2 means switch to protein building mode, which means if you encounter a codon read of negative 2, then the next 5 chemicals you read, you don't gather that chemical. You instead make a protein in that order. All right, so proteins. What does an organism do with a protein? Well, most of them aren't functional. Most of them just eat up resources and don't do anything. But some small fraction of them speed up the gathering of one of the chemicals. So a chemical made, a protein made of chemical 13154 might speed up the gathering of chemical 3, and some small probability of that. Now, the first time a protein is made by any organism, its functionality or lack thereof is determined randomly, but then it's remembered for all future organisms that same protein has the same function. And if a new protein is just a few point mutations away from an existing protein, it has basically the same function. It's assigned to the same family. But if it's a huge mutation, or every once in a while when it's a small mutation, it's assigned to a new family with either with no function or a completely different function. So proteins come in families. Then we have complexes. Most proteins don't bind to each other, but every now and then proteins combine to form a complex. And you can form a complex of size 2 proteins, 3 proteins, 4, 5, or 6. And a complex's function is independent of the proteins. And in fact, most complexes are not functional. They just bind up the proteins and don't do anything. But every now and then, one of these complexes has a function. So a functional complex of length 3 might have 0, 1, 2, or 3 non-functional proteins in it. Most complexes are non-functional. Those that are functional are a protein complex is better than a single protein. It has the protein's function to the power of, you know, if a protein speeds up gathering by the speed of 5, a protein complex of size 2 speeds it up by 5 squared. And again, protein complexes function is randomly decided, and complex families are composed of proteins of the same family. So we're trying to be model biology somewhat here. So after 10,000 codon reads, an organism's fitness is calculated by the chemicals it gathered, and each organism, we typically run it with starting with 50 simple organisms with a random genome of just 40 different chemical reads, no protein making. And we start with 50 organisms, and every generation we have 50 organisms again. Each individual organism can reproduce 1, 0, 2 or more times based on its fitness. And there are point mutations that can happen. But again, we want to be biological here, and so we allow genome doubling, gene copying, gene deletion, and horizontal gene transfer. Results. Well, so on every x-axis is going to be the number of generations the model has run. And the top graph, the y-axis, shows that the fitness, that is, its ability to gather chemicals, is going up, 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 sometimes in pretty quick jumps over the space of 10 generations. And also the genome length, which is the bottom graph, is going up. So what it is looking like is occasionally there's these genome duplication events, and every now and then a new protein, functional protein, is discovered by one of the organisms, and in the space of 10 or 15 generations, it sweeps the population and the whole population is one of its descendants. And we go through several jumps in this case. Complexity. So again, we have generation number here. So complexity is defined as the size of a protein complex which is used to gather chemicals. So it starts at 0. Initially, these organisms don't use proteins. Well, then they discover a protein, and then they discover how to make proteins of complexes of size 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and we actually cap it at that level. We don't let them get any larger, mostly for practical computational reasons, although I can spin you a biological story if you want. But in green, you see irreducible complexity or interlocking complexity, which we define this way. A complex of size 4, which has 2 functional proteins and 2 non-functional proteins, has an interlocking complexity of 2. So basically, it's the number of pieces which have no function outside the complex. So you can see, you know, for a lot of the middle section there, there's a lot of complexes of size 2, but a lot of those have at least one functional protein in them. But eventually, we reach times where we get complexity 4, 5, and 6, and every one of these 6 protein complexes is irreducibly complex. You remove one piece and none of it works. All right. So, by the way, I want to add one more thing here. I don't think that this is a model for how complexity evolves biologically through the entire history of evolution. Okay? If I had to guess, the period of evolution which perhaps this most closely models is that long period of time when single-celled organisms from the beginning of life until the Cambrian explosion, when there was a lot of horizontal gene transfer, in single-celled organisms. I think this mechanism of new protein complexes stumbling upon new functions may be less important, although not completely unimportant, later on once we get into multicellular organisms. But that's something we want to study. Eventually, we have movement in place because we want to understand how quick does complexity evolve when the environment changes, when one of the food sources goes away or a new food source arises. How does this happen? So right now, this model is at the place where when we have our default parameters, these organisms evolve complexity and interlocking complexity over the course of several thousand generations. And for any one of the dials, any one of the, like the point mutation rate or the gene duplication rate or the chemical gathering rate, any one of the dials that we can turn, if we dial it one way, complexity evolves more quickly. We dial it the other way and complexity evolves more slowly or does not evolve at all. So we're very happy with it here at this level, and now we want to start playing around with it and say, what are the conditions which speed or slow down the rate at which complexity evolves according to these mechanisms? All right, so just a little time, a little theological reflection. As I said at the beginning, self-assembly to produce complexes which have capabilities far beyond the component pieces really seems to be built into creation at multiple levels. And this really amazes me. Particles combine to form atoms, which combine to form molecules. Atoms combine to form stars and planets with oceans and air. Molecules combine to form autocatalytic cycles, we believe, and it can certainly be computer modeled. Maybe life can form that way. Single-celled organisms combine to form multicellular organisms. Organisms combine to form ecosystems. Sensing cells combine to form information processing brains. Individuals combine to form social groups. Parental care evolves to more complex forms of reciprocity and altruism in time. There really seems to be a theme going, and some historians are noticing this. If you've heard the term big history, that's one of the themes that's being noticed. I can't say too much about this, but it seems to me that there's a purpose, there's a teleology, that this is telling us something about God's character, God's purpose, what God enjoys having in creation, and what God wants us to see in creation. Now, I could wax much longer about this, but I'm about out of time, so I'll leave it with that level. Yes, the way it's currently, with the current default settings, removing an agent has less of a catastrophic event as removing a resource. It is noticeable, and we suspect, we haven't done this yet, if we tweak it around so that we have a lot more resources than agents, then the agents will become then once you get to the point where every resource is only be gathered by one agent rather than two or three or four, then probably every agent will be as vital to the functioning of the whole as every resource. Yes, and the economist who's working with me and I want to do a lot of studying about, say, bottom-up controls versus top-down controls. So if you want to build in resilience, you can imagine bottom-up incentives to allow duplication of devices. Or you can imagine top-down controls which say, well, you have to invent two or three versions of this device. And is one system better than the other under what conditions? And similarly, things like if an agent gets sick, private charity by the other agents to help it get better fast, or a public health system. You know, we can imagine adding these things to the model. Or fraud. You know, if we allow agents to commit fraud, do we just allow agents to stop trading with fraudulent agents, or actually put punishment mechanisms in? We want to look exactly into building in resilience and different mechanisms for building it in. In the next few years, we'll start adding those things to the model. We don't know yet, because right now that run took like 2 weeks. We're in the process of converting it from Python to C, where it can run a lot faster, so we want to investigate that. I'm guessing that was a random event, but it might in fact be a real phenomenon in our model, and we have to figure that out. Yes, in economics there is, for reasons that have to do with economic discipline, but in biology I would say yes, there is... There isn't a lot of study of the mechanisms by which complexity evolves for precisely the reasons you stated, which kind of leaves a niche for me to play around in. Well, it is, in fact, true in biology and in society that when people specialize and trade and become interdependent, the vast majority, you know, again and again and again, we see everybody's better off. All right. So the way I like to think of it is, if you were a complete utilitarian self-interest maximizer, but rational, that should be sufficient reason for you to say, well, we should all live in a system where we, you know, specialize, trade fairly, deal fairly with each other, value each other for the contributions to society. Even if I don't see directly your benefit, I know you're part of this vast system that I benefit. Obviously, we have far better reasons to value every person in society, but even if that's all you had was pure rational self-interest, once you have this highly interdependent system, interestingly enough, valuing other individuals highly is in your self-interest. Yes, that is right. These systems are more fragile, and that is something that needs to be thought about and added to.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.